Before I share my words with you today, I've brought a little responsive reading that emerged in my household. It's nice to live with another minister. We get to sort of riff off each other a little bit. And when Reverend Denise wrote this and shared this, I was like, oh, I need to use that. That's amazing. She was doing a sermon, and she was pulling some information about James Reeb, the UU civil rights activist who was killed in Montgomery, whom our sister congregation on the other side of Madison is named. And it's based on his quote, "I couldn't just stand by." So James Reeb was once quoted as saying, "When people of diverse backgrounds and ideologies come together, what was impossible becomes possible." And I think in this time when the odds seem stacked against so many things turning out well, I think it's good to have inspiration of the impossible seeming possible. So to that end, when he was asked what led him to leave his home and join the marches thousands of miles away, he was also quoted as having said, "I just couldn't stand by," or "I couldn't just stand by." So today I'm going to read a series of statements, and I would invite you at the end of each of those to repeat in as animated a voice as you can the response, "I couldn't just stand by." When I saw books being banned, I just couldn't stand by. When I saw our voting rights being suppressed, I just couldn't stand by. When I saw our rights to safe legal abortions going away, when I saw less and less affordable housing for families, I couldn't just stand by. When I saw my black and brown neighbors being pulled over and jailed, I couldn't just stand by. When I saw my planet being destroyed and my water being poisoned, I couldn't just stand by. When I saw my immigrant neighbor being taken away from their family, I couldn't just stand by. When I saw people's ability to make a living wage being taken away, I couldn't just stand by. When I saw the right for basic health care become a profit-driven industry, I couldn't just stand by. And when I saw children unable to go to school safely and mass shootings becoming daily occurrences, I couldn't just stand by. James Reeb knew he couldn't do it alone. He knew he needed community. And we all need family and congregations like this. He knew we needed each other to stand by each other to make change in the world. When I first heard this responsive prayer, I knew it was a powerful litany designed to inspire the members of community to action in a moment in history when citizen mobilization is needed perhaps as much now as ever. We have the opportunity to go to the polls next week to cast our votes in an election where respected historians are being quoted on reputable news outlets as saying that our democracy, which has formed the bedrock of our collective salvation story in this country for the past 250 years, is in genuine jeopardy of complete collapse. I am proud of the members of this community that heeded my call to the Social Action Committee several months back to find a common cause for this community to get behind, and the connection that was made with the Wisconsin UU State Action Network, WUSON, to align us with the coordinated Get Out the Vote activities, both here in Wisconsin and in other battleground states. Thank you, Molly and Pam and Chris and everyone else that responded to that call to join this effort. The latest stats I received from WUSON is that our community's volunteers have combined with 450 other UUs across the state to register 110 new voters, have 3,500 face-to-face conversations, make 3,000 phone calls leading to 300 conversations, sent 600 letters, 50,000 texts, and 7,700 postcards. Can any of the folks that contributed to these efforts that are in the room raise your hand? And I know, there we go. And I know, yes, exactly. And I know Patty is on the, I think Patty's on the call, and I know that she and probably some others there helped as well. The margins in these elections are razor thin, and if I was the praying type, I might certainly say a prayer that these actions and the actions of others like them happening around the country will be enough to tip the scales in the direction of continued equal rights and equal access for all. How in the world did we get here? How did our society transition from a story grounded in the concept of all for one and one for all to an individualistic, ruthless, dog-eat-dog, capitalist free-for-all where the privileged tip the scales ever more in their favor and the great mass of humanity is pit against one another in a fight for fewer and fewer remaining resources after our planet has been plundered to feed a never-ending hunger of greed and acquisition? And more importantly, how do we maintain hope in a future that is beginning to look more and more hopeless each and every day? Now, as I wrestled with this sermon the week before the midterm elections, I wrote and eventually tore up dozens of pages about the fallacies of the story of our democracy was founded upon. Because although that is a truth that needs to be wrestled with at some point, it's not really the focus I wanted to bring today. The truth is, I think many of us are scared, and rightly so. So even though we are on the precipice of a potentially monumental shift in our democracy, now is probably not the right time to pontificate about all the structural inequities that have led us to this point. When it is hope that is needed most, I always turn to this community. Because this little community gives me more hope than just about anything else in the world right now. It is ultimately the breakdown of communal structures that has led us to the messes that we are facing today. And I'd like to say that it would have been an easy thing to fix, but this community is smart enough, and if I offer nothing more than simple platitudes, I know that you'll walk away from here perhaps feeling less hopeful than when you arrived. So my challenge today is to speak some hard truths, but also to offer at least the suggestion of a rationale as to why the perspective I'm sharing and the suggestions I'm proposing have a chance of making even a lick of difference in our lives. So the first thing I want to do, as if I even needed to, is to convince you that our society is ailing. Dr. Bruce Perry, in his engaging new book titled What Happened to You? Conversations on Trauma, Resilience, and Healing, notes that the typical college-age adult is 30% less empathic and more self-absorbed than 20 years ago. One study documented a 40% increase in psychopathology in American college students over the last 30 years. The authors suggest that this is related to cultural shifts towards extrinsic goals such as materialism and status, and away from intrinsic goals such as community, meaning in life, and affiliation. This aligns with the conversation and research that has been reported to me by members of this community that have raised their children here and have followed up with them as adults. I heard a quote in one of the Mission and Vision sessions last month that a mom whose daughter, after being raised in this community, reported from college. She said, "Mom, no one here has a sense of who they are. They haven't developed their own moral compass. They all just seem to be lost and adrift." Dr. Perry goes on to say, "Our society's transgenerational social fabric is fraying. We're disconnecting. I think that's making us more vulnerable to adversity, and it's a significant factor in the increases in anxiety, suicide, and depression we are currently seeing, even before the COVID-19 pandemic." So, it's easy enough just to say, well, sure, community sounds like the solution. And for those of us in my generation and those that are coming just behind me, it's great that we've all found a place like Prairie. Maybe if we just keep showing up every Sunday, all the problems that we know exist in the world will somehow just be taken care of, right? No, unfortunately, it's not quite that simple. I think one of my roles as a minister is to give voice to uncomfortable truths. Maybe to keep members of the community from having to do so, but more likely to model the importance of speaking truth in community. And the more uncomfortable the truth, the harder it can be to speak, and the more important the telling of that truth becomes. So here is my first truth today. Truly being together in meaningful ways in community is hard. It is not the easy path. And although it's always been hard, it has become infinitely harder today than it was even just a relatively short time ago. Throughout most of human history, connection to community was necessary for one's very survival. Dr. Perry goes on to say, our ancestors recognized the importance of connectedness and the toxicity of exclusion. The history of the civilized world, in quotes, on the other hand, is filled with policies and practices that favor disconnection and marginalization, that destroy family, community, and culture. I was not raised UU. I did not learn about the value of being connected to a community like this until I was almost in my mid-40s. And despite the fact that I have intuitively come to believe that connection to a community like this is beneficial for me and for my family and for anyone else that is lucky enough to find their way here, the truth is that I recognize in myself deep, deep wiring that actually needs to be consciously overcome again and again to engage in the behaviors needed to develop and maintain the connections that are required to both share my gifts and reap the benefits of being a contributing member of a community such as this one. Today's sermon is not for the ancestors of this community, although it is their efforts which laid the foundation that allow us to be here together today. And it is really not for the current matriarchs and patriarchs of this community that have been doing the work needed to bond this community together, although this sermon is offered with a bow to each of you and a sincere gratitude for the lessons your lives offer and the legacy which your daily actions continue to create. Now, this sermon is really targeted at my generation and those that are becoming behind us. There are a ton of funny memes out there about my generation, Gen X, many of whom, like me, were latchkey kids that came home from school to empty houses while our dual-income parents were away at work, scrambling to make enough money to keep up with the American dream that was quickly becoming further and further out of reach. My generation is portrayed as the kids that were left to fend for ourselves. And we looked at our parents and we said, I don't know what I want, but I know it's not that. I don't want to be a hamster on the wheel. We are self-directed, self-sufficient, and focused on doing whatever we need to do to take care of ourselves. And unfortunately, typically, only ourselves. My generation's goal is typically listed to be this elusive state known as work-life balance. The goal typically listed for Gen Y, the generation directly after mine, is freedom and flexibility. One thing that's especially interesting to me is the desire listed most for the generation after us, the Gen Zers born after 1995, is security, which is nearly the same as the boomer generation that came before mine. It's funny how human systems always seem to run through circular cycles. But today I'm really talking about the Gen X and Gen Y cohort, the work-life balance and freedom and flexibility people. Because as you're about to see, these are not necessarily the aspirations that lead to the creation of cohesive communities. And it is communities that create the glue that is needed to keep human society working together today. It is the dynamic of community that creates social bonds required to nurture healthy individuals. It has always been this way. And to think that the comforts of capitalism might somehow allow us to override millennia of human development is ludicrous. The challenge we are presented with on this quest to maintain a community like this, and thus to collectively reap the benefits generally associated with being connected to a community like this, is that in the day-to-day and moment-to-moment decisions of how to spend our time, it requires choices that seem harder than the alternative of just going it alone. Sadly, the seemingly easier choice of going alone is an empty vessel. Easier in the moment, but disastrous in the long term. As E.B. White famously said, "I get up every morning determined to both change the world and have one hell of a good time. Sometimes this makes planning my day difficult." Capitalism continues to offer us easier and easier ways to have comfort and a good time. The apps on our smartphone are literally programmed to draw us in with the same dopamine-inducing action-response mechanism as is used by Las Vegas to hypnotize folks into a state of bliss while they're giving all their money away. The game on our phone, mindless scrolling on social media, the endless blitz of new content for us to consume. We are being kept distracted with nothing, and we are paying the price collectively. So again, it's easy enough to say, well, that's probably not where we want to be. This idea of community certainly sounds more healthy. But here's the rub. It's actually way harder to actually be in community with others. And we humans are wired to always seek the easier path. Hence our addictions to social media, the glass of wine after work, and whatever else it is we do to run away from the problems of the world. Being in community requires us to make harder choices than we would if we just decided to go on our own. A perfect example of this harder choice of community is this masking due to COVID. Many of you know that I was the source of a recent outbreak of COVID here in this community. I went on vacation, I masked on the plane, but like most of us, I figured the numbers seemed better, the guards were let down, and I returned from vacation and back to this community. I walked into a meeting in the annex, I looked around the table, no one else was masked, so I sat down and I joined the group. What I should have done, knowing that I had just traveled and might thus be contagious despite having no symptoms at all, was put on the damn mask. But I didn't do that. And as the night came, I began to feel ill. And sure enough, I had COVID. And by the next day, nearly all the people that were sitting around that table were infected as well. Let me just confess in front of this community that I feel terrible about this. As a leader, I should have known better that it is my responsibility to take extra steps needed to ensure that the weakest among us are protected. But I didn't do this, and I made people sick. And here's the thing about community. Unfortunately, without anyone saying anything, a lesson that I knew in my head has now been embedded in my heart. Keeping my community safe requires me to do the right thing, even when it's uncomfortable to do so. Not because I am vulnerable, but because there are people in my community that may be vulnerable. Wearing a mask, not the easier choice, but a choice that keeps the community safer, especially as the news is reporting that COVID, the flu, and RSVP are coming back with a vengeance. The numbers aren't showing it yet, and the COVID team is continuing its current policy of placing the decision on what to do for each individual, which is not, there should be no guilt. We are honestly, genuinely saying, do what you think is the right thing to do. But I'll never forget when I came to church in the weeks after we removed the mask policy from mandatory to optional. 90% of the folks in the room continued to mask. Some may have done so for personal protection, but I know that there were others that did it because they thought it was just the right thing to do. And still others probably did it because of the social expectation they could feel as they looked around the room. Whatever the cause, the community generally continued to wear these pain-in-the-keister masks to protect each other while we were together. And if this behavior was replicated in other small communities, more people would be masked in the grocery stores, and less people would get sick and die. What happens in society is what happens in 1,000 smaller communities, replicated over and over again. There are 100 examples like this. The creation of a healthy, vibrant community requires individuals to show up when they might prefer to be doing something else. When a call is put out to lend a hand, be it to organize a fall fundraising fair or provide childcare for an evening so parents in our community can enjoy a rare night of respite, each of us faces a choice. We can either say yes, or we can ignore the request and leave it to someone else. And this is the challenge that makes community hard. Leaving it to someone else feels easier in the moment. But over time, leaving it to someone else is the death knell in a community like this. A handful of folks that keep showing up get burnt out and pull back. Program quality slips, and the magic that is this community can begin to fade away. And unfortunately, magic is exactly what a community like this needs to overcome: the incessant, hypnotized, sparkling, nothing allure of the quick and easy obscure that defines our capitalist distractions. It takes all of the creativity and energy and drive of not just one, but a team of volunteers to create a compelling enough experience on a Sunday morning where the kids that we are trying to nurture into healthy adults are eager to come back to the fountain for another drink, as opposed to saying, "I don't want to go, I'm bored. I'd rather stay home and play on my phone." I will be the first to confess to you that I know that it is not always easy to choose the path of community. On a sunny day, I'm drawn to my garden, or to take my boat on the lake, 100 different things that might feel more enjoyable in the moment than writing a sermon, or visiting an ailing member, or developing an adult RE class. And this, my friends, is where faith comes in. I believe that doing the actions that feel harder in the moment will lead to greater happiness in my life and in the world over the long haul. It's like exercise or eating right or any other practice which requires to suspend short-term pleasure for longer-term gain. And just as the Buddhists tell us that the best way to become a successful practitioner of meditation is to do so together with others, and fitness folks tell us the best way to stick to your fitness goals is to commit together with others, the same is true of the work it takes to heal our broken world. We need to not only come to church on Sunday, but we need to commit to do the work that church requires. Not just one or two super volunteers, but everyone. When the call goes out to join together to staff a table at Pride Fest or to help out with childcare, I hope you will remember the chant that we did earlier together, when we thought of all the ills of the world and we are all committed to finding a way to cure. Our children won't do what we tell them to do. They will watch how we act in the world, and they will follow our example. When the next call goes out to contribute your time and talents in some way for the benefit of this community, I hope each and every one of you will hear the echo of James Reed being spoken together by our collective voices. I just couldn't stand by. I just couldn't stand by. I promise you, jumping into the messy fray of community, especially when it is harder than just standing by, is the path to our collective salvation. It is your actions that inspire me. And in turn, I hope I am motivated by your commitment to this community to go above and beyond in ways that inspire you. It truly does take a village to change this world. Blessed be, and may it be so.